This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
My name is Gabriel Urbina, and I am your first Bad Ideas host.
My name is Sarah Shackett. I'm your second Bad Ideas host.
And my name is Zach Valenti, your third Bad Ideas host.
And welcome one and all into the pit, where all the bad ideas in the world eventually find their way into as we try desperately to find a way to turn them into good stories. Zach, Sarah, how are you guys doing today?
Pretty good.
Very good. Freshly vaccinated.
Yes.
Excellent. As am I.
Oh, yeah. That's sweet vaccine smell.
Those sweet, sweet antibodies.
Oh, yeah. You just feel the power of science coursing through you.
It's like the superhero origin story for all of us. Let's talk about things that are not great, though. Gabrielle, yes. I think you have an idea for us.
Oh, I have an idea, and I am so excited for this idea.
Oh, boy.
Evil laughter.
For anyone who is joining us for the first time, I'm going to do this very quickly just because I really want to get to this idea. We bring ideas from the internet, things that people have done, usually in the forms of articles or Reddit posts. And then we give ourselves just 10 short minutes to try to turn these ideas into a good story, or at least a pitch for a good story, or at least the beginning of a semblance of something that might one day be called a good story. Are you guys ready to dive into this first bad idea?
Yes, I have never seen this red steely glint in your eyes.
No, you're not, but don't worry, we're going to do it anyway. Alrighty, and dear listeners, you're going to be able to find a link to this article in the episode description if you would like to read along. Here we go. The headline reads, Japanese man arrested for lying to his 35 girlfriends.
Whoa.
The headline clarifies, not a typo.
Somebody's got a lot of free time on their hands.
I know.
Well, we're
going to get exhausting.
We're actually going to get into it in part of the article, but we're going to have to go to a couple of twisted places before we get there. The article reads, cheating on your partner is a universally terrible thing to do, but is usually not illegal. One Japanese man's scheme that had him dating at least 35 women at once, however, turned out to be criminal. Takashi Miyagawa, 39, was recently arrested in Osaka for defrauding at least 35 women, all of whom were reportedly manipulated into believing that they were each in a serious monogamous relationship with him.
For how long?
Oh, it gets even better, Sarah. Don't worry. Whoa. Like, we haven't even gotten to the weird part. This Casanova's alleged crime? Faking his birthday and getting presents all year long.
Oh, man.
Are we sure that he's 39 and not 12?
These are the good questions. These are the good questions.
Man, he was definitely gunning for 365.
According to Japanese news outlet MBS News, the part-time worker told one 47-year-old girlfriend that his birthday was on February 22nd, but said to another 40-year-old woman that his birthday was in July. Another 35-year-old thought Miyagawa's birthday was in April. His actual birthday is November 13th. It's unclear how exactly Miyagawa's scam unraveled, but in February, the women banded together to form a quote-unquote victims association. They then reported Miyagawa to the police for defrauding them of 10,000 Japanese yen, which is approximately $919 American. The combined sum of what they supposedly spent on gifts for his fake birthdays. Miyagawa reportedly met these women while selling shower heads, water purifiers, and other equipment for a multi-level marketing company.
Wow. Wow.
In an interview with MBS News, one of Miyagawa's victims said that he had told her that he was serious about their relationship and wanted to be with her forever. A camera crew from MBS News found Miyagawa back in January before he was arrested, leading to a painfully awkward ambush interview on the streets of Osaka. Quote, "You're Miyagawa, right?" the reporter asked. "No, that's not right," Miyagawa responded while attempting to bolt from the interview. The video comes to a peculiar end with the reporter trying to keep up with Miyagawa as he runs away. The bizarre crime has people amazed and amused. Quote, "Are you aiming for a Guinness World Record?" wrote one Twitter user. One user applauded Miyagawa's insane multitasking skills. Quote, "He's skillful and diligent. What great talent. It's not possible to do this unless you can remember the personalities, names, jobs, and preferences of 35 people," they wrote on Twitter. But many were just trying to figure out how exactly Miyagawa pulled this off. Quote, "With 35 people, if he was seeing one person a day, that means he could only meet the women once every 35 days. If he met 2 to 3 women a day, then he could see them every 2 weeks," one tweet reads. "Did he treat dating like he was juggling different part-time jobs?" And that is the end of that article, of the very strange story of this man who just wanted to get birthday presents all year round. And really, isn't that something that we can all sympathize with?
Let me know when you started the timer.
10 minutes on the clock. The timer starts now.
So my question is, did he get in? Was there a tipping point where it became a Bernie Madoff style pyramid scheme after, like, say, 13, where he was like, "Man, this free cake every other week is great. I'm going to keep this going." And then he's like, "Wait, oh no, they're having birthdays. Now I need to get presents to give them as presents because I can't afford these presents on my multi-level marketing salary."
So he's like re-gifting the presents.
That's what I'm wondering.
No, this is the same present goes to each. Here we go. You buy in bulk.
So this is now the romantic comedy version of Winchester 73.
Let's not do that. Just, I'm going to go ahead and say, wow. Yeah, there's like some fascinating Gordon Gekko-esque character study of someone who gets burned by a multi-level marketing scheme and then decides that they can apply it to their dating life.
Birthday presents are good.
Yeah, it seems like this is what's happened to this man. Do we want this to be a romantic comedy, Zach? Do we want it to be a comedy? A very dark Oscar bait movie with Jake Gyllenhaal?
I think you're addressing the central tension that I had in my mind when I brought this, and I was curious about this. Because, like, the main thing to decide is he deliberately doing this in the story? Or is he just the protagonist of the world's most over-the-top harem anime and just accidentally found himself this weird confluence of circumstances through just like a series of improbable casualties that have just led to, not casualties, coincidences rather, that have just led to a truly over-the-top situation?
Well, now that you've put a button on that pitch, I think we can focus on potentially the real idea, which I don't know, I'm thinking like Horrible Bosses, but with dating, where it's like all the people that he's been stringing along get together.
And right. And like, I mean, like, they talk about that in the article. They form the association.
Right. Yeah. The association of victims do more than bring him to court. And maybe the scam was more than $900 US.
Right. Well, there's that movie.
A lot of money, U.S.
It is.
Yeah, there is that movie with like Cameron Diaz and who's the other one where they
Is it Leslie Mann?
Yeah, I think so. Where they team up against
Nikolai Coster-Waldau.
Yeah.
Actor's name.
And that movie is kind of like, my God, he was juggling 4 women. What a Lothario. How over the top. And then it's like, nah, hold our wine. They keep going and keep finding more and more women with this other guy.
And fraud is fraud, and $900 divided by 35 is like approaching IMAX movie ticket price.
Sure.
Yeah, I wonder, the other thing that occurs is like, our one of our go-tos on this show is now there's an app for that to manage your multiple partners.
Wow.
And this guy is maybe, like, if we want to make him sort of a less of a scumbag, like the QA tester who has to, like, max it out and to his horror finds he can support over 30 partners.
Wow.
I mean, there has to be, like, if that's going to go, if that's the way that it's going, like, there needs to be a reason why he's not telling them, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I mean, he's contractually obligated by threat of, I don't know, that losing NDA, his man. Credit score or something.
Oh, sure. Okay. So, like, they have a gun to his, like, financial well-being.
Something like that.
Right. It could be like a boom or bust situation. Like, if you can get it up to this level, we'll pay off all of your student loan debt. If you tell anybody, you go to the Dickensian poorhouse that still exists for some reason.
Sure.
I don't know.
Well, there's this new startup called Poorhouse, but it's just P-R-H-S-E.
I hate it.
It's P-O-R dot house, and the O has like an umlaut over it.
Oh, no.
I like that we're turning this into just like a story about the evils of Silicon Valley.
Right. The dystopian hellscape that is.
You are 5 minutes into your 10 minute time.
Okay.
Well, it's a thought. We could either sort of chase that rabbit hole or go back to him being more of a Lothario character and have it be centered on the Victims Association.
Sure.
It was just striking me that it may be more entertaining to watch him flail and be sort of an unsympathetic lead than to, you know, just basically watch a witch hunt.
There is something, and like, I think that like our human brain just like really enjoys seeing someone kind of like impose order upon something that chaotic. But I think that there is something where, like, we see someone doing something that is this bad, but requires this much organization and this much brain power, and our brain a little bit short circuits, and we kind of end up going like, well done? Like, my God, like, you know, what is your spreadsheet game?
Yeah, like, this is awful. How?
Yeah.
Also, like, how many of the people did he convince he's a spy and only available, like an inverse werewolf?
What are the excuses? What are the excuses for, you know, he goes out on a date with someone. It's really great. They're really smitten with him. They're like, you know, let's see each other again. And he's like, how about the 17th? And she's like, I'm a little bit busy. How about the 18th? And he's like, I really think we should do something specifically on the 17th. That's the day that we can do the 17th. Otherwise, know, the 2nd of next month in the morning.
Don't you want to be there on my birthday?
Same time next year.
Yeah, it's wild.
Let me be the title of it, Sarah. Don't you want to be there on my birthday?
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, man. I wish I could do more with the birthday element, but it's just all there in the article. Like, you can't improve on it.
It sounds like he didn't make it to year two.
Let alone year three,
at which point it's like, do you ever want to celebrate your birthday with your other friends?
I think that that may be like the other comedic element. He has these 35 fake birthdays, and then it's like, you know, like, oh, but like, what do you want to do on your real birthday on like November 13th? And he's like, I want to be alone. Like, I just want to be alone in my house. Wow. Well, just like a quiet night.
And not talk to anyone.
Yeah. We should get back to the story after this. But I was wondering, like, how much of the thousands or so dollars that he stole were on his actual birthday, and how much of his defense is like, hey, 367 of those dollars were on my real birthday.
It would suck to be the lady who had his real birthday and therefore had no legal redress.
Right.
To make the story even stranger, I ultimately picked this Vice article because it was, I think, the funniest and the most comprehensive. But another one of the articles covering the story that I did read pointed out the, I think, like, beautiful detail that, like, aside from his strange job working for kind of a scam company, this was a man with no set address. Like, there was no, like, there was no, like, oh, yeah, he lives at, like, this specific avenue in this, like, number house, which raises to me the question, where was he keeping all these presents?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
This is a man that desperately wants to be caught doing something.
This is a cry for help if I've ever seen one.
Yeah. Yeah.
A storage locker that was repossessed for a fake birthday.
Maybe he actually was a spy and, like, needed actually, to be caught by the government for protection.
Wow.
Wow.
And it's like, then you can do, like, the reverse James Bond of him, like, trying to be all, like, smooth womanizer. But really, he's like, no, please see through this.
All I want for my birthday is for someone to see how stupid this is.
So, like, really needy James Bond without guns.
Yes.
Right, and there's some plot, and, like, I like this, like, because he can't just kind of be like, hi, I'm a spy, but there's something in the clause that is, like, if somebody else spots it, that's on them. Like, yes. I am not committing treason in that case.
Right, right. So I'll see you in 2 months. 2 months, right? But, like, this day, 2 months from now.
He's, like, booking, like, you know, like, back-to-back dates at the same spot, hoping that the two people will, like, meet each other.
Just through random happenstance, it works out in his favor.
I know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like, one of them gets a call, like, they need to rush off 5 minutes early. He's like, no!
Why can't you stay? I love you.
Well, that's time.
Wow, don't you want to see me on my birthday? Of course, the real jackpot in this idea, the ancillary, the dating sim that we can release alongside the movie.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, Lord. I don't even want to think about that.
Right. This is
so,
like,
stressful.
Yeah, this is like the Dark Souls of, like, dating sim video games, where it's like, you know, like, at the start of the game, you're kind of seeing all these 35 people, and it's kind of like, how much can you go through it without any one of them breaking up with you? And it's only, like, the grand masters that can make it through the entire game without anyone breaking up with them.
Yeah, it takes years for that IGN guide walkthrough to come out, because that's how hard the game is.
Well, let us get on the horn with IGN and see how much that would cost to commission, because I think this is one of these cases where we would need to build the game based off the guide for it to make any sense.
Yes.
But we'll be right back after that.
Hello, dear listeners. It is I, Zach Valenti, jumping into this episode with this brief announcement. Do you love No Bad Ideas? Do you support the work that Gabrielle, Sarah, and myself put out week after week, whether it is this show or any of our fiction programs, like our recent Unseen audio drama at unseen.show? If so, please head on over to nobadideaspodcast.com/support and sign up to give a monthly contribution to help us keep our lights on over here at Long Story Short HQ. Once more, that's nobadideaspodcast.com/support. And if you're not in a position to give or want to go the extra mile, please do share this program and any of our other work that you like. All right, that's it. Let's get back to more No Bad Ideas. Wow, I've never been shuffled out of an executive's office as quickly as that IGN meeting.
We will leave that game in development.
That may be a game that needs to stay in development hell for all of our souls' sake.
Yes, I think to save us all. But I have another damned idea for you guys.
Tell us more.
Yes, this one is from theartnewspaper.com. Ooh.
a new paper alert.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I've even heard of this place.
I had not read their work before I found this idea, which flashed across my Twitter. And dear listeners, if you would like to read along and see the picture that is included, then go to the episode description. There's a link. And I'm glad that we sort of warmed up with some Silicon Valley villainy, because I have more for you.
All right, all right, all right.
All right, so headline of the article reads, Basquiat drawing to be auctioned.
Oh my God, I know this. Yep.
NFT and winning bidder will be given the option to destroy the original.
What? Nope. Nope. Yeah. I reject this. What? You cannot turn this into a good story. This is such a bad idea density that we cannot do it.
I'm well, sorry. Just let me give you some details. Maybe you can find something to hook on to. All right. So first there was the burned Banksy. Yep. Now, the winning bidder of an NFT, or non-fungible token, of a drawing by Jean-Michel Basquiat will be given the option to destroy the original. The 1986 mixed media work on paper, Freecombe with Pagoda, was bought privately in 2015 for an undisclosed sum. It has previously been offered at Heritage Auctions in Texas in 2012 for $80,000 to $120,000, but failed to find a home. An NFT of the work is now being sold on OpenSea Marketplace, where bidding starts at one Ethereum, which is the equivalent of around $2,500. But in a twist, some will view as perverse, some will view, the physical drawing will be deconstructed, quote unquote, on purchase. So if the buyer wishes, leaving the NFT as, quote, the only remaining form of the Basquiat work, which is authenticated by the late artist's foundation in 2002. The auction is sponsored by Daystrom, the self-described digital provocateurs behind the online bank, the late singer David Bowie launched in 2000. In an online statement, the anonymous founders of Daystrom say, quote, value has become increasingly fungible, diluted, and unstable in our evolving metaverse, and there's a tremendous spike in user demand for exclusivity. NFT assets provide this exclusivity and create an entirely new online value system that was previously unimaginable. According to Daystrom, the transaction will be stamped on the Ethereum blockchain. It will memorialize ownership, quote unquote, as well as, quote, reproduction and IP rights that will be sold to the highest bidder in perpetuity. Though the consensus is that buying an NFT, much like a physical work of art, does not confer copyright.
Yep, sure.
You know, whether destroying the original Basquiat helps ensure its eternal authenticity on the blockchain remains to be seen. In the meantime, it is hard to view its, quote, deconstruction as anything but iconoclasm. And that made me smile. I was like, oh, the art newspaper. Well done, you. So I bring you auctions that destroy auction pieces. This is what I have for you. And I'm going to put 10 minutes on the timer.
So you guys remember the infamous marketplace, the Silk Road?
Yes, yeah. We do remember that place.
For anybody who forgets, this was one of the first places you could, I won't say lawfully, but technically spend your bitcoins to buy any assortment of things from...
Buy things.
All manner of objects.
Organs, hopefully not people, but also murder. And so I'm just wondering.
We've talked on this very show about someone who tried to buy a hitman on the Silk Road.
And so I'm wondering how many Basquiat fans that lose out on the maximum bid for this NFT to protect the physical piece would then turn losing it to somebody who is intent on burninating would then turn to, I don't know, a road, maybe silk, maybe not. Who's to say? To ensure that person's imminent and hopefully predating the burning of the piece demise.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. Like, there's something about this that just sets my teeth so on edge. And I'm trying to figure out what it is. Because, you know, this is a piece. It's not in a museum. It's a private collection, if I understand correctly. Like, it's been sold to private owners in the past. Technically speaking, 10 years ago, before this NFT nonsense existed, somebody could buy this piece and get, like, you know, and get their favorite lighter. And, you know, and that would be tragic in a certain sense, but I wouldn't find it nearly as infuriating as I find this. And, like, because this does make me want to go, like, yeah, no, Zach, those people looking for that assassin on the Silk Road, they have a point. Let's.
The perversity is in the sort of delusion of transference, where it's like, I burn this piece in effigy to create value in a new, like,
and it's facsimile form.
Which, it's like the piece is embedded, or the, you know, a picture of the piece is embedded in the article I just read. Like, you know, for most people who do not care about exclusivity, I've seen the piece. I've experienced the piece. I don't know what an NFT gives me that looking at that image does not, in terms of, like, the experience of the art. Now, the question of ownership is a different matter, but.
Right. And this is where, like, I might be not for burning anything. And if Basquiat was alive today and I could get his digital signature on anything, I could imagine that, like, on my deathbed with potential grandchildren, it would feel nice to give them, to sign over to them something that had been signed, even if only digitally, by you know, one of the most amazing artists ever. And from that perspective, I see value in digital signature, you know, whatever.
Yes.
That aspect of NFTs. The fact that posthumously somebody else is making some bullshit that's somewhat tangential, it seems so secondhand that I just don't. Yeah. This doesn't track for me.
Okay, we've reeled. we've taken a moment to kind of, you know, like, be horrified.
3.5 minutes to reel, which I respect.
Now let's do our job.
You have 6:30 left.
Christ. Okay,
I mean,
so
this screams heist to me. I don't know about y'all.
Yeah, I don't know why my mind jumped to Baby Driver. Maybe for all the violence.
Well, because that's kind of, I think, like a heist movie that is made by someone that, like, can only do their crime while consuming art.
So maybe like Hackers meets Baby Driver.
Maybe. I don't hate it.
No, I'd watch that.
Just to kind of set a premise to this. So is the kind of idea, like, some people find out that this auction is happening, and so they're trying to steal the original before the auction can happen, so that they're protecting it from the world where evil bags mech money pants, the, you know, famous anarchic millionaire gets their hands on the original and destroys it.
You could use the same cast from Monuments Men and, like, call them the same names, because I don't remember those characters at all. But I do remember that John Goodman and Matt Damon were in that movie. And just have them be, like, futsy-dutsy art connoisseurs and professors in the modern day who engage on this heist for the good of the art world.
Uh-huh. I have to confess, I never saw Monuments Men.
You're fine.
I dig it. And I think the setup is less like, you can buy the NFT and if you want, you can burn it, to, like, no, when the NFT sells, this gets liquidated at midnight.
Right. We will shred it in the auction.
Right, exactly. So they have to replace the actual piece with a facsimile.
Ooh. Okay. Now, are they also somehow behind the seller? Like, is this one of these, like, we're making our money twice because we are, you know, selling the thing, presumably for millions of dollars, but also keeping the real thing secretly and only destroying a replica? Or are they kind of outsiders to this world that are kind of going, like, no, the establishment has lost its mind, we need to set them right?
I think, like, traditionally you would have the second one, and maybe one person on the heist team is double dipping. But I think it could go either way, honestly, and it just depends how salty we want to be about this whole business, which I, from the most of this conversation, my feeling is a lot.
Sure. Okay, so we have some museum curatorial network, you know, like someone that works at MoMA, someone that works at like a San Francisco museum. They're all kind of like pen pals. And then one day they find out that like this is happening and they're like, okay, we need to stop this liquidation. What did they call it? This deconstruction?
Deconstruction.
Yeah, yeah. Deconstruction of this piece by stealing it. But they're all kind of like art nerds from all over the world that are coming together
right.
for this one heist. And they need to break into Baron von Evilberg's castle in the highlands of Bavaria, where this auction is being had.
And they'll keep getting distracted.
What am I saying? It would be happening. It would be happening in like Oakland or something.
Yeah, well, no, it's definitely about? Like the crypt.
It's happening at
keeper.
The Getty, Gabriel, is where it's happening.
They would be breaking into the Getty. Yeah.
It wouldn't be like the crypt keeper with like crypt spelled with numbers. And it's like,
I mean, that's who's bidding.
Oh, I see. I see. It's not even like a secret layer. And which is I always mix up Iceland and Greenland, which is the one with the volcanic where they would have like a good place to put a crypto farm server.
Probably
thing.
Iceland, is more populated. I think.
Yeah.
Right.
Greenland is mostly seals.
I mean, I'm down for either one of these. Like, oh, both yeah. of these sound like eminently.
Because then you can have another ice field chase, like in Die Another Day. And that was very good, I think. I would like another one, please.
And then another one of Die Another Day?
Just like some of the action sequences. That's all.
Okay. No, okay. Okay. No, just
Halle Berry doesn't need to get involved unless she wants to.
Halle Berry can do whatever she wants. I'm still waiting for that Jinx movie. I was promised the Jinx movie. Back in 2002.
Well, you have just over a minute, so...
To jinx it. Okay, never mind. Let's get back on track.
So they're at the Getty.
I was going to say, so they're in Iceland.
And presumably they steal the thing. What happens to the piece at the end?
Oh, I think that it hangs on, like, the lead character's refrigerator or something. Like, you know, like they, like kind of a very, like, hiding in plain sight. Sort of a thing. And like throughout the movie, there's something about like them having to deal with like they are not happy that their museum has a gift shop where people like are selling replicas. Like they are someone that is like there that has like a long term problem with kind of like, you know, the tchotchke culture of the art world.
Sure.
And then eventually like the real thing ends up like hidden in like their house as one of these tchotchkes.
Right. Somebody comments like, hey, that's a cute drawing. Your kid do that? He's like, yes.
An old friend, actually.
An old friend.
Yeah. I don't know, like, how she gets everyone else on the team to be okay with that. Maybe they all die in the course of the mission, depending on how intense the crypt keeper
is.
Maybe she's the only one that makes it out alive. Maybe the rest of them get deconstructed.
Yeah, they all get turned into NFTs.
No!
Oh, no. Well, that's time. A Pyrrhic victory for us and for culture and for art. Well done, guys.
I feel like my brain got stuck in neutral just from like the article itself with that one. Just how do we even approach this?
No, I read that and I was like, I'm angry enough that I'm bringing this to the show.
Yeah, that is. I hope that this is a flash in the pan, so to speak.
It seems very attention giddy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just not looking forward to the future book burning where you need to own the NFT.
That first edition of Harry Potter will not cut it anymore, guys.
Yikes. Oof. Yikes.
Yeesh. Yeah. No, there's something like, you know, I was one of the people that was like on like team when like that Banksy had that auction that as soon as the auction was over, the painting like shredded itself.
That was part of the piece. Yeah.
I was one of the people that was like team Banksy. That was awesome.
Yeah.
But there was kind of an element of like, number one, you're buying a Banksy. You should kind of expect some fuckery. Number two, this is still kind of like an artist that is here and present and part of a continuing like art career. Doing this with someone who like not only is gone, but like was gone tragically young.
Yeah.
In kind of like a beautiful, promising career cut short just seems like all the more macabre.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Do better. NFTs.
You know, we used to work on the street that he died on.
Really?
Great Jones. Great Jones. Oh, you remember that Japanese beef store across the street with the little crown drawn on it?
Yeah.
That's the place.
Wow.
Or at least that was a place that he used to, that crown's
had
there for a reason. Yeah.
Holy shoot.
The more you know.
All right. Well, we're going to go. I'm going to go re-examine everything that I know about the places where I spend a lot of time. But dear listeners, we hope that you've had a good time, and we hope that you'll be back next week for more No Bad Ideas.
This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Many thanks to our patrons for their partnership in making this show happen. And a special shout out to our Idealist members, Jennifer Schneider, Rena Sarame, and Rebecca Allen. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at nobadideaspodcast.com/support. And if you love this show, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks.